Hey guys, and welcome to the MMD podcast. Today, we'll be discussing a debate regarding the legality of medical marijuana. My name is Karina Tervetti.
My name is Vivian Sue.
Alyssa Kim.
I'm Isha Patra.
And I'm Simrit Shala.
So discussing in favor of medical marijuana will be Vivian, Alyssa, and Isha, and against medical marijuana will be Karina and Simrit.
Thank you, Vivian. So to start off with some background information, California was actually the first state to legalize medical marijuana in 1996. And since then, research has been done on the benefits of medical marijuana. In the June of 2018, the FDA has approved medical marijuana as a treatment for two rare and severe forms of epilepsy, Dravet syndrome and LG syndrome. These treatments are now in pill form and known as dronabinol and nabilone. As of 2019, it is now legal in 33 states and the District of Columbia. Studies have shown that medical marijuana can treat nausea caused by chemotherapy, increase the appetites of people with AIDS, and relieve long-term pain. There are two main components of marijuana, THC and CBD. THC is responsible for the high that people get when they use marijuana. Medical marijuana has a low concentration of THC and a higher concentration of CBD, while CBD has the medical benefits. Now let's jumpstart this podcast with the pro side.
So I would like to begin by stating some of our arguments in favor for the widespread use of medical marijuana. Medical marijuana can be potentially extremely beneficial for a large number of medical conditions. Many people, after large and invasive surgeries, suffer from chronic pain, which is defined by pain that lasts about 12 weeks or longer, consisting of debilitating agony. Typically, patients who suffer from this chronic pain are prescribed strong pain medication derived from opioids.
And just to clarify, opioid-derived pain medication presents a high risk of addiction for patients. As an alternative, medical marijuana can also treat the same symptoms of chronic pain with a much smaller risk for addiction.
In addition to being a pain medication substitute, like Alyssa mentioned, medical marijuana can be prescribed in order to aid cancer patients who suffer from the symptoms of chemotherapy. Chemotherapy can lead to malnutrition due to the nausea experienced by patients. Medical marijuana used as a supplement to these cancer patients allow for increased appetite, reduced nausea, and increased attainment of nutrition.
But the most beneficial implementation of medical marijuana we want to highlight is through the FDA-approved medication Epidiolex, which can be used to treat specific types of seizure conditions, specifically Dravet syndrome and LG syndrome. Epidiolex is a purified CBD extract from the cannabis plant. Just to remind you, this is the beneficial component of marijuana as opposed to the THC that gives people a high. Researchers studied this medicine, Epidiolex, in controlled clinical trials. These studies used a control group with some people taking a placebo or a sugar pill while others were given CBD at different doses.
In these trials, researchers didn't know who was getting the placebo and who was getting CBD, making it a double-blind procedure. These type of studies are called gold standard studies. The results from this clinical are very much in favor for the implementation of Epidiolex for Dravet and Lennox-Gastaut.
So I'm just going to talk about some of the gold standard studies that Isha mentioned. The clinical trial from the New England Journal of Medicine published in May 2018 showed that the addition of CBD to a traditional seizure medication decreased the frequency of drop seizures significantly in children and adults with Lennox-Gastaut syndrome. In addition to this, the clinical trial published in May 2017, also in the New England Journal of Medicine, showed that among people with Dravet syndrome, CBD resulted in a greater decrease in convulsive seizures than the placebo.
What's up, my dudes? Alyssa Kim back at it again. Before we start with the con side, we're going to slide right into some fun facts.
So who's your favorite president that used medical marijuana? You're right, it's George Washington. And what do all basic people drink these days? Starbucks. Denver has more marijuana dispensaries than Starbucks locations. Nevertheless, soon marijuana will overtake your favorite McDonald's restaurants too. Goodbye, Big Mac, and hello, marijuana.
Now let's get back at it with the con side.
Isha, those are some very convincing points, but medical marijuana is a powerful and poisonous drug, and if implanted into medical facilities, there would be many risks at hand than there already are.
According to many, especially Stuart Gitlow, who is an MD and a testimony to the Senate Committee on the Judiciary, there really is no such thing as medical marijuana. For example, according to numerous studies, medical marijuana is an important risk factor in the health of many patients, as it can lead to chronic coughs, heart attacks and strokes, and can interfere with fertility. According to Ryan Von Drey, a psychiatry researcher at Johns Hopkins Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland, says that even at modest doses, you can get increases in heart rate of 20 to 30 beats per minute, and it can go higher. If someone with cardiovascular risk factors experience a short-term bump in heart rate, that would be a concern. Marijuana smoke also contains cancer-causing agents that can lead to lung, head, and neck cancers. Smoked marijuana delivers THC and other cannabinoids to the body, but it also delivers 100-plus different harmful substances that marijuana contains to users and those close by, including many of the same substances found in tobacco smoke, which are harmful to the lungs and cardiovascular system.
Going along with health risks, medical marijuana is extremely harmful for individuals, especially teenagers. Medical marijuana alters a teen's brain structure, causing a change in their behavior. The dopamine levels in teenagers decrease when they use marijuana, which ultimately affects the teen's amygdala. The amygdala is a part of the brain that is responsible for detecting the fears and prepares your mind for emergency situations. Evidence in 2013 have shown Dr. Sharon, who is currently the assistant professor of pediatrics at Harvard Medical School, addressed an open letter to the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, in which she expresses a concern that marijuana does cause changes in the same areas of the brain as other addictive drugs. Another study from New Zealand, conducted in part by researchers at Duke University, showed that people who started smoking marijuana heavily in their teens and had an ongoing marijuana use disorder lost an average of 8 IQ points between ages 13 and 38. The lost mental abilities did not fully return in those who quit marijuana as adults.
I do agree with that statement, Simmer, as not only is marijuana harmful to teens, it also impairs the patient's daily and mental functions, such as their short-term memory, cognitive ability, problem-solving skills, and balance and coordination. In making decisions, long-term users showed a 70% impaired performance, compared to a 55% for short-term users and 8% for non-users. This is due to the fact that THC binds to cannabinoid receptors, which are concentrated in areas of the brain associated with thinking, memory, pleasure, coordination, and time perception. The effects of marijuana can interfere with attention, judgment, and balance. This greatly leads to the high percentage of automobile crashes and workplace accidents.
Going along with your statement, Karina, the National Institute on Drug Abuse states how medical marijuana can be highly addictive, and experts believe that the higher the THC levels and increased usage of medical marijuana will increase the likelihood of physical dependence. This will cause users of medical marijuana to crave it when there's no access of medical marijuana. Use of marijuana as medicine can ultimately lead to adverse health effects, like THC-induced cognitive impairment.
So now we're going to start the rebuttal portion of the debate. And on the side of in favor of medical marijuana, I just want to ask you guys, the other side, isn't it true that all medications that have been prescribed by physicians do in fact have side effects?
Yes, we do believe that all prescription drugs have side effects, but we believe that the costs outweigh the benefits. As when implementing the medical marijuana into the hands of patients, the risks of side effects range on a larger scale than most other prescription drugs. So, especially with the little bit amount of research that has been done to account for all the side effects of medical marijuana, physicians are not really certain of all the side effects that medical marijuana can occur in each type of patient, and with the wide range of treatments that it could even make even worse. So we believe that it's just not the risk.
However, since all medications have a frequently long list of side effects, we think that justifies the use of medical marijuana because there is in fact no perfect drug that exists.
In addition, you guys talk about how unsafe medical marijuana is, but the FDA has approved medical marijuana as a safe medication. And so if the FDA approves it, it must be safe to some level.
And if it was unsafe, then the physician wouldn't prescribe it. So that's our point in rebuttal to your safety concerns.
Yes, however, even with like how you guys say that it will help chemotherapy, it will help chronic pain. But really, if you do legalize these marijuana, it actually will lead to harmful consequences that can serve as a what we call the gateway effect. And this basically means that it will lead to many people to have go to illegal drugs like cocaine and heroin, which use basically have greater opportunity and under greater social pressure to try these other illegal drugs. And we also believe this evokes the analogy called the stepping stone hypothesis, which basically means that it is the idea that there will be a progression from marijuana to other drugs, which arises from the pharmacological properties of marijuana itself.
Okay, so you guys saying that it's going to lead to other, like a gateway drug, it's going to lead to other uses. But right now, morphine and other opiates for pain medication is currently legal. For example, if you suffer from an injury or you suffer from an accident, morphine and oxycodone will be prescribed to you. And right now, that leads to a lot of addiction. So 259 million opioid painkiller prescriptions were written in 2012, and then 2 million people later developed an addiction to this. So you guys are saying this will happen with marijuana, but it is statistically proven that actually marijuana is much less addictive than opiates. So if you can use marijuana as a substitution, it's almost like a lesser evil than the opiates.
In addition, THC is the addictive part of marijuana. However, in medical marijuana, the THC levels are very high as there is more of CBD, which is the beneficial part for the medicine. Therefore, medical marijuana isn't actually as addictive as regular marijuana.
The medication that we're talking about is Epidiolex, and it's actually 98% CBD. So there is almost no room for the THC that is the addictive portion.
However, statistics shown a recent study by Columbia University's Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse found a pronounced difference in future drug use between kids who used marijuana and those who did not. It revealed that teens who smoke marijuana are 85 times more likely to use cocaine than those who did not. This means the odds of using other drugs increase with the increased frequency of marijuana.
In conclusion, I think we can all agree that this topic is highly controversial and has no clear resolution. Personally, I think that more research needs to be done over time regarding the use of medical marijuana, given the fact that it is derived from a recreational drug. Thank you guys so much for listening. Please let us know where you stand and why. See you next time. This is Alyssa Kim, signing out.